Hello and welcome to Great Tracks and Sidetracks. It's the first programme of 2026. I'm Peter Fleming and I'm back with the usual sort of format of great tracks from the 60s, 70s, 80s, even maybe the 90s, who knows. And then sidetracks from the International Express. So here we are, it's another new year. They go past so fast, don't they, these days? And all of a sudden it'll be 2027. Wow. I'll start the show with a nice sunny track, which is, in fact, from the Beatles, and Here Comes the Sun.
Here comes the sun, here comes the sun, I say. It's all right.
Beatles with a track typical of what you're likely to hear on this programme, of course. Well, what happened over the Christmas period? I was trying to think. I usually like to talk to you about about any entertainment and things that have gone on. And I'm trying to think what we've done. Didn't go to the cinema much at all, but we did go and see Twiggy, the story of Twiggy, the model. And what a fabulous lady she is, and still going strong. It's a super movie if you want to go see it. Of course, if you're a boomer, as many of us are, you're straight back down memory lane there with lots of interviews with artists from the time. And yeah, a really nice film altogether. TV, well, I don't know, I've been watching various things. we just discovered the latest May Gray series, which is on 3 now, and that's this sort of son of May Gray. So the only connection with the original May Gray is he carries his father's pipe about. good series, excellent series. There's six episodes and they come in pairs. If you recall the original, if you're old enough to recall the old black and white Maigret with Rupert Davies, was it? Yes. He had his sidekick was a fellow called Luca. Well, that's been adapted slightly now. So the current Maigret's sidekick is a girl called Lucas, that's right. But anyway, no, good series. And I tell you what, it's fantastic. You can sit there and relax and watch it. And there's not any effing and blinding. It's absolutely wonderful. I'm sorry to be old-fashioned about this, but I do find it irritating when they sort of introduce the F word for no apparent reason. If you want a fine example of that, watch The Assassin, which is Keely Hawes, who doesn't seem to be able to stop effing and blinding all the way through. And I just find it, it sort of stops and starts the programme for me, and it just doesn't sound right. And she's another person that you almost get the impression it's not a sort of word she normally uses. And it's just introduced willy-nilly and it doesn't quite fit. But I say, you can call me old-fashioned if you like. Right, that's enough of that little gripe there. So I've picked out all sorts of typical tracks for this programme. So my next one is Rolling Stones, who cannot get any satisfaction.
I tried.
And so to the International Express, and my first article out of the bag for 2026 is an interesting one about a playground for children. I find it a little bit interesting because we have a playground not too far from us, well out of earshot, I hasten to add. We're in Wykenai, and just over the railway up the hill there, and there's a notice went up. I might have mentioned this before. Council put a big board up, maybe back as far as September, October time, to say it's the little play area there, which was a sort of classic steel pole job, that's brightly painted, but it's all steel poles around. Far better, I must admit, than anything we had when I was a child, but that's another story. Anyway, the council are proposing to renew it, and of course, if you look at children's playgrounds these days, well, they rip out all the metal poles and they replace them with big fat wooden poles, which I suppose is that eco-friendly? I don't know. Anyway, they asked for comments, so I went back online and I said I couldn't see the point. At the time when rates are going up at a colossal rate, excuse that, you sort of think, well, do they really need to spend money on this sort of thing when all it needs is a coat of paint? But no, they're going to apparently, there was two designs there of different sort of styles of playground. Anyway, so that was my comment. There was an opportunity, in fact, on one Saturday morning, I think there was a council representative there you could have had a chat with. So I've waited, it's been quite interesting, and I've had a couple of feedbacks from the council just to say thank you for your comments, and then another one to say, well, we're looking at it now. So I'm interested to see what they do. As I say, I can't really see that it was any need to replace it completely, but a coat of paint would have been good. But otherwise, it's got some interesting bits and pieces on there for kids to play on. So anyway, we're back to the UK, and this is council tear up play park after 130,000 pound noise row. The village play park has been flattened after two neighbours successfully sued for £130,000, that's $260,000, over the noise from kids having a kickabout. Diggers moved onto the site and tore down its games area and skate park, pitching residents against one another. This is in Chapel on the Frith. You've heard of that place in Derbyshire. Parish Council was fined £100 and ordered to pay two residents £130,000 following a court hearing. Just three people had complained. One mum, who did not wish to be named, said, "I'm gobsmacked that a case like this even got to court. Youngsters need facilities like these and to be encouraged into sports." Yeah, it's a funny old business, isn't it? Another resident said, "I live near the park and it was lovely hearing children playing and kicking a ball about. I can't understand the mentality of some people who expect silence while living next to a park." I suppose the argument was that there wasn't a park there perhaps when they first moved there. Anyway, these people took the council to court in 2021, but lost after a judge complained that the complainants were hypersensitive to noise. But a High Court judge overturned that in November 2022 and gave the council 4 months to shut the area, the play area, or move it. Wow. I don't know. I was close to one a few weeks ago, and I had to go to a building which was next to a children's play area, and it was a Sunday afternoon, and there was a couple of kids playing in the area. It was quite noisy, and just over the fence there were just ordinary houses with neighbours, so I can understand people getting a bit upset, but well, I don't know, it's a bit of live and let live, isn't it? So I say unfortunately it doesn't affect us, but I'm very interested to see what happens to the play area down the road from us as to what the council do. I'm sure they're just going to blow another load of rates money on it. We'll have to wait and see. I suppose we've become used to amazing bits of electronic equipment that now we wear on our wrists, and we call them watches. But if you go back to the origin of the wristwatch or the pocket watch, in fact, well, of course, it's a totally different business altogether, and they were a mechanical item. Now, here's a little article. £2.1 million pocketed for watch. A pocket watch which took 4 years to make has smashed a world record after fetching £2.1 million at auction. The timepiece is hailed as one of the most complicated ever made. And it was made in Britain in 1907 by Joseph Player, a celebrated watchmaker from Coventry. It shows the phases of the moon. There is also an alarm and thermometer. It was tipped to fetch £1 million, but bidders were stunned when it went under the hammer for just over 2.1 in Switzerland. Joseph's great-great-grandson, Carl, said, "Even though I didn't meet my great-great-grandfather, by holding that watch, I felt a connection to him." Phenomenal, isn't it? I mean, the craftsmanship that goes into packing all the bits and pieces into a thing the size of a pocket watch is absolutely phenomenal. And it's just a shame in some ways, I think, it's that sort of craftsmanship. I know it's still there, and people do still turn out watches and clocks, the old mechanical style, and I'm sure that, you know, hopefully they earn a lot of money for it. But when you can just stamp out a chip these days which does everything and more, I do think it's a pity, because let's hope that collectors and people do keep the old skills going with things like watchmaking. And so back to music. And good old Bee Gees. How deep is your love?
I know your eyes in the morning sun. I feel you touch me in the pouring rain. And the moment that you wander apart from me, I wanna feel you in my arms again.
What do you know about truffles? They're not a sort of thing that normally a part of everybody's diet, are they? If you probably never eaten a truffle or as such, or if you have, it'd be a tiny black speck in something or other. I do remember once in Australia, went to all these rather fancy restaurants in a vineyard, and they did pig's trotters with truffles, and it's so memorable. I can't remember the taste now, but it was a fabulous combination. Anyway, so funny old things, truffles. You know that they're the sort of fungus that they grow at the base among the roots of oak trees, I think, isn't it, generally? Anyway, here we are. Truffle wars break out in quiet woods. This is in the UK, of course. A bitter war has broken out in the tranquil woodlands between two premier truffle hunters after they launched rival festivals a week apart. Melissa Waddingham claims her protege, Ben Sweet, used her expertise to set out on his own and stole her secret truffle spots. And they are secret, yes, son. The feud came to a head when Mr. Sweet's UK Truffle Festival in Hickstead in West Sussex was held recently, just a week before Ms. Waddingham's Great British Truffle Festival in nearby Plumpton. His festival was declared a success, attracting hundreds of visitors. As a result, Ms. Waddington said ticket sales for her festival were well down on what she expected. Bit unfortunate, isn't it? She said, I passed my knowledge on to Ben, showing him how to train dogs, where to hunt for truffles, and leading him to the best and most prized spots in Sussex. I feel he has taken that knowledge and used it to usurp my position. Well, he in turn disputed the claim. He continued to use secret truffle spots found by Ms. Waddingham. He said, I've spent years identifying and working my own areas. No one can own a wild truffle site. Of course, you get them out here in New Zealand. On Country Calendar, I seem to recall a family of been encouraging truffles to grow on their property. Of course, they're worth a fortune, absolute fortune. I think they're worth, well, probably more than gold by weight. Yeah, so a bit unfortunate, this. I first came to a friend of mine who was doing a crossword or something, and general knowledge anyway, and what's the group name for pigs who find truffles? And they refer in this article to dogs, but I know that you can use swine pigs to find them, and they're known as truffle swine, and a group of them is a syrup, S-I-R-O-P. So they are. There's a little bit of education for a syrup of truffle swine. That means several pigs under control going through an orchard, sniffing out the truffles. That's a syrup. Yeah, it's a bit of an old-fashioned little story there, but, you can understand why the lady was upset, but perhaps there's room for both of them. Here's another track from the Hollies, who are waiting at the bus stop. With the holiday season firmly here, it's interesting to read an article here about airport security lounge, and would you be better off with a pint? Well, we all know what it's like when you're hanging about at an airport and you see the lounges tucked away there, and of course they're only normally available to business class first. Do you get first class now? Anyway, business class passengers. A bit disappointing because they're not available to premium economy passengers, of course. Anyway, but if you've ever been in an airport lounge, they are rather nice. They're generally fairly quiet, and of course all the food and refreshments are free, and you get away from the madding crowd. But are they worth it? Because you can, if you want, you can pay extra, and you can find your way into an airport lounge even if you're not a business class passenger. So an undercover survey has found what many passengers will have suspected for years, that airport lounges are not worth the money. Travellers have been advised to just go to the pub instead. Now, the magazine Which did a research into 28 lounges. The consumer group began reviewing them in 2017 when the average cost was £25, $50. This often included showers, spa facilities and magazines. Now, the average price has gone up to £42. That's from 25. £42, just over $80. The spas have gone, the magazines are online, and using the showers will cost you extra. They say there was once a time when an airport lounge was a special treat, but our latest results say quite the opposite. Instead of paying more than £40, $80, for a lukewarm buffet breakfast on a dirty plate, ooh, ouch, you can get more for your money at a bar or restaurant in the airport. There are some better lounges, but check for deals online or through your bank or holiday provider. Each lounge was assessed for facilities such as toilets and showers, where the customers get a runway view if there are quiet areas and spaces for families, as well as the food and drink selection available. According to Which magazine, few impressed and only a third managed a score of 3 stars or above out of a possible 5. That's pretty poor, isn't it? The most expensive lounge was in Newcastle, and it was £68. £68 just to use the lounge. Despite that, it only got an overall rating of 2.5 stars out of 5. That's interesting, isn't it? It makes you think. I say they are nice places to go, and they're very quiet often. But the last time we flew business class, we went to the UK 2 or 3 years ago. Well, there were some cheap flights just after COVID, I hasten to add. And I must admit, I wasn't terribly impressed with them, no. Often they were quite hot. You sort of think, oh, it'll be nice and cool and nice air conditioning, but some of them were quite hot, not that comfortable, really. Well, there we are, airport lounges. You see, you pay your money and you take your choice. Here's Elvis.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me when you don't believe a word I say? Say hello. Would I still see suspicion in your eyes? But here we go again, asking where I've been. You can't see the tears are real, I'm crying. Don't believe a word I say. But
You'll hopefully recall that terrible story about the sycamore tree, the gap tree, that was felled in 2023 by a couple of idiots. What was it? Do you remember? It's a single tree that was sort of growing on Hadrian's Wall up there on the border with Scotland. And for no apparent reason, these two guys just set off and cut it down. And it caused an outcry all over the country, if not further parts of the world. So anyway, there have been frantic efforts to keep the memory of the tree alive by taking seeds that they'd got and growing saplings, and it's all good news. The first of 49 sycamore gap saplings from the National Trust Trees of Hope initiative have been planted. The scheme was launched by the charity in September 2024 to find homes for saplings grown from the beloved sycamore gap tree. The thriving plants will now be given to individuals, community groups and organisations across the UK. The 120-year-old tree, located next to Hadrian's Wall in Northumberland, was deliberately felled in September 2023. Nearly 500 applications were received for the 49 saplings, one to represent each foot in height that the tree was at the time it was cut down. The plantings, which are now between 4 to 6 feet tall, that's pretty good, isn't it? Were grown from seeds rescued from the felled tree and have been carefully nurtured at the National Trust National Trust Plant Conservation Centre in Devon. That's really good news. That's really nice. I mean, it's a bit like the tree at Wanaka, isn't it? I mean, imagine if somebody went and cut that down. It's just awful. But they've done the fantastic work here. So they've actually got 49 gap trees going now from that original one. There's a bit more to this story in a later newspaper, and I'll just play you a little bit of music from the Rolling Stones, and I'll come back to the ongoing story of the gap tree. Thank you. So back to the Sycamore Gap Tree. They're making a documentary about it, which is hardly surprising, I suppose. And this is an article in the paper talking about the policeman who was involved. A detective who helped nail the Sycamore Gap vandals has told of the mistake the pair made that led to their conviction. When the 120-year-old tree was chopped down in September 2023, as we know, Detective Inspector Callum Michael was brought in from Northumbria Police's rural crime team for the case. He said investigating the unique crime was at first difficult. He said you've got a very remote scene, you've got no witnesses, you've got essentially no CCTV, and you've got no immediate forensic evidence. So his team were reliant on tip-offs, and they arrested Daniel Graham and Adam Carruthers after receiving intelligence that the pair had, stupidly, kept part of the tree. The information had not been disclosed to the public. Officers also discovered voice notes on the pair's phones of them discussing the operation, a video of the felling, pretty damning evidence, and a photo of the tree wedge in Graham's car. The duo were jailed for 4 years. Yeah, so this detective inspector speaks about his role in a documentary about the crime. And, he said people say that it's just a tree. It's far more than that. And I think we all agreed it was. So there was a huge outcry. People were really upset about it. And he said, as for the pair claiming it was done in a drunken blur, he said they'd driven such a distance during a storm, they parked and walked 20 minutes across the rough terrain with heavy equipment, not exactly a spur-of-the-moment decision. So 4 years each, that's, they won't be doing it again, will they? No. Back to music, and let's set the tone again for the rest of the year, and let's have our first listen to Pink Floyd with probably my favourite, is Comfortably Numb.
Saying when I
Oh, good old Pink Floyd. And stand by for more tracks throughout the year. Well, there we are. That's made our way through the first show of 2026. And hope you've enjoyed the music. I'm all set now for... got my feet back under the table, got the microphone sorted out, and I'm all set for another interesting and hopefully enjoyable year with great tracks and sidetracks. So until the same time next week, this is Peter Fleming saying bye for now, take care, and see you next week.
To lead a better life, I need my love to be here. Here, making each day of the year, changing my life with a wave of the hand. Nobody can deny that there's something there. There, running my hands through my hair, both of us thinking how good it can be. Someone is speaking, but she doesn't know he's there. I want her everywhere, and if she's beside me, I know I need never care. But to love her is to need her everywhere, knowing that love is to share. Each one believing that love never dies, watching their eyes and hoping I'm always there. I want her everywhere, and if she's beside me, I know I need never care. Watching their eyes and hoping I'm always there. I will be there and everywhere, here, there, and
this program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the Access Media website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.